Even before the outbreak of war in Iraq, Arab leaders in the region were perhaps already adjusting to what former Mideast envoy Dennis Ross calls a new reality. Arab leaders were either lining up with the United States and Britain against Saddam Hussein, Mr. Ross says, or initiating small but significant moves in the direction of reform. Dennis Ross coordinated Mideast policy during the Clinton administration. He also worked in the Bush administration. He now directs the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and joins us in our studios. Thanks very much for being with us again.
Pleasure.
You have used the phrase window when talking about this war. A window to what, as you see it now?
A window to change. A window to creating a new landscape in the Middle East as we've known it. But like any window, it's not likely to remain long or open for long. It's like a moment, and the question is, will we be able to take advantage of that moment when it comes? The moment itself isn't going to come until after the war, and obviously right now we're still in the midst of the war.
How important is the prosecution of the war as much as the result?
It's very important, because if the war turns out to be very long, if the war involves the deaths of lots of Iraqi civilians, it matters less if we're responsible or the Iraqis are responsible, meaning Saddam is responsible. Mm-hmm. It's the result. If that happens, then we're going to find that the anger level towards us is going to be quite high. And the prospect of our looking like we have been, in fact, liberators and emancipators is going to be less compelling.
To your mind, what do you make of the fact that we have not, as we sit in this studio at least, seen the kind of mass defections that some people were talking about? Maybe even if it was just journalists, a little hopefully.
I think there's what I call the kind of certainty-uncertainty continuum. There remains uncertainty about us, which is a result of the legacy of 12 years ago, when in fact there were uprisings and we weren't to be found. There is certainty about him, meaning if Saddam survives, the certainty of retribution is a given. So until there's an absolute conviction that he's gone, I don't think you're going to see the kind of outpouring of emotion that one might have otherwise anticipated.
And the U.S. and Britain have only themselves to blame for that.
Well, certainly from the past, you have to deal with a legacy, and you have to recognize there is a legacy. And from the present, I think Saddam actually developed or at least learned some of the lessons of the past. First, he stocked up with all sorts of food and material down in these places. Second, he sent his most trusted, I can only describe them as thugs, down there to help underpin the weight of the Ba'ath Party leadership. So the people
this is the Fedayeen we're talking about.
Yes.
The guys in the pickup trucks with guns.
Absolutely. The people who were most likely to ensure the maintenance of his control structure are there in a visible way, and they're reminders that the British and the Americans may have come in, but for the most part they're not in the cities.
At their joint appearance this week, President Bush and Prime Minister Blair once again talked about the vision for the Middle East that they see falling into place after the war in Iraq. To what degree is that vision and the enunciation they're making of it now also part of the strategy that has to unfold over the next few weeks?
I don't know how much that particular vision is actually going to be persuasive at this point to people in the Middle East. Later on, perhaps. Right now, they're riveted on the war. The leaders are obviously looking to the future, and what they want is something that allows them to grab onto something to say, look, it will be different. So to the extent to which the President and Tony Blair talk about the future in a different way, it is something they will use for a later period of time.
Mr. Ross, based on your experience in the region, what flashes through your mind when you see pictures of some of the mass demonstrations over the past 10 days?
In the region?
Yeah.
The sense of hostility towards the United States is something that runs very deep right now. And I'm afraid it's a function not necessarily just of our immediate policies. I think it goes to something much deeper. There is an abiding sense of humiliation. It's deep-seated. It goes way back. Osama bin Laden, in his very first tape, his very first videotape, made a reference to 80 years of humiliation, which refers to the post-World War I period when the borders were carved out by Europeans. So what you have is a pattern of constantly feeling victimized, feeling betrayed, somehow feeling that something is imposed on you. And that sentiment is what we see in these demonstrations. The anger level, the humiliation is directed towards us. It's also directed to their regimes. The regimes humiliate the publics. They deny them the ability to have a role in their own future. The outside world humiliates the Arab world. The Arab world, which at one time had such glory, is now relegated to lagging behind the rest of the world. All these things come together to create alienation, anger, and a sense of humiliation. And it's not so easy to turn that around.
To what degree do you think are there regimes in the region who are willing to press ahead with a process of reform, just in the basic recognition that that's the way the demographics are falling in their countries?
I think there's an increasing recognition of it, but I think it's also one size doesn't fit all. You see different countries, the smaller ones tend to be more open to this. You look at a country like Bahrain, where there are not only elections, but the women are included in the election process. You look at some of the bigger ones, at least in terms of stature in the region, like Saudi Arabia, and they're beginning to talk the talk, but I'm not sure they're ready to walk the walk. They'll embrace the imagery of reform because they think it's probably a wave of the future, especially if the war comes out a certain way. They know it's going to embolden Arab liberals, and the Arab liberals are out there. They have found their voice, even if they don't have a strong platform. Last summer, there were 25 Arab intellectuals who wrote a human development report for the UNDP, and they talked about why the Arab Middle East has lagged behind, and they identified several deficits: a deficit in democracy, a deficit in education, meaning what is taught and how it is taught, and a deficit caused by the exclusion of half the population, meaning no role for women in society. Now, this was authentic because it came from them. What they need is to find a basis on which to feel more confident that they can push their agenda. For our part, we can build on this by not imposing anything, but making it clear we stand for certain principles. We stand for tolerance.
Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
Dennis Ross, director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He was Special Mideast Coordinator during the Clinton administration.